There are a few words in our language that are adapted from artist names, and one of the most popular is Rubenesque, which is used to describe buxom, full-bodied women, the kind of subjects favored by Peter Paul Rubens, the late Baroque painter. But Mark Lamster argues that by doing that, we've seriously pigeonholed the great Flemish artist. He was also a writer, illustrator, architect, classical scholar, and most interestingly, a diplomat who worked for much of his life trying to end what has come to be known as the 80 Years' War. Mr. Lamster's book on the subject is Master of Shadows, The Secret Diplomatic Career of Painter Peter Paul Rubens. It's published by Doubleday. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Did your interest in Rubens begin with his work as an artist or a diplomat?
What I'm interested in is this cross between politics and diplomacy. Between diplomacy and culture. So I was interested in him always for both reasons. I think that that's a really interesting space.
Well, as a cultural figure, he could travel a lot. And did that make him a likely candidate for this kind of work?
That really played into it. His familiarity with monarchs and political leaders across Europe really made him a perfect candidate for covert operations and later diplomatic work.
Did he keep a diary? How do we know about his secret work?
Well, he didn't keep a diary, but his correspondence was incredibly voluminous. And also, the people he was corresponding with kept his letters and were also quite busy correspondents. So there's quite a good track record of what he was doing. Of course, anytime you're writing about secret meetings, that's always difficult because by nature they're secret and you're not exactly sure what's happening and there's not always good notes as to what transpired. They're secret by nature.
Well, how much do we actually know?
Well, I think we've been able to figure out quite a bit about what's going on through history. We see what happens, and there is, again, a very strong record of correspondence.
And he liked to write in Italian.
He wrote in numerous languages. Rubens was an unbelievable polymath. He spoke six languages, wrote in six languages, probably more, Latin, French, Italian, Spanish, German, Dutch. I think he probably spoke English, although there's no record of it, but he spent considerable time in England. And someone who is so gifted a polymath, it seems impossible to me he wouldn't have picked it up.
And one of his the key figures in his factory, because he had ran something like an artistic factory, was Van Dyck, who, for all intents and purposes, was an English painter.
He became one, yes, yes. That was one of his prized pupils.
You begin your book with an assignment given to Rubens to deliver on behalf of his patron Vincenzo Gonzaga, the Duke of Mantua, a huge gift to the King of Spain.
That's right. Rubens started out his career as a painter in Antwerp, which is where he grew up mainly. Actually, he was born in Germany, but his family was from Flanders.
And that's Belgium today.
Belgium, modern Belgium. But he felt like to really become fully developed as a painter, he would have to visit Italy, take a grand tour. And I think people still today feel like they don't understand art until they've visited Italy, they've been to Rome and to Florence. And he spent 7 years in Italy, and he attached himself to the court of Mantua. And Mantua is a client state of Spain. And the Duke of Mantua felt it would be very wise to send a gift to the King of Spain, and he sent Rubens to deliver this gift, and the trip was an utter fiasco. It was Rubens' first diplomatic job, and he made pretty much a hash of it.
I'm surprised that he was a success in Mantua. His predecessor there as an important artist was Mantegna, whose work is quite different, but I guess art tastes had changed by this time. We're talking 150 years later or so.
Well, I think he was inspired by Mantegna and this incredible program of patronage that the Mantuan dukes had developed. Mantua is sort of a provincial city, and they used their art patronage program to sort of put themselves on the map, and which was one of the reasons Rubens was able to thrive there.
So the Vincenzo, who wants to please the King of Spain because the King of Spain could send in an army and pretty much take over any time he wanted, sends this young artist to carry out a complicated diplomatic mission. Should we be surprised that the thing didn't go well?
Well, No, I don't think it's any surprise that it didn't go well. He didn't really have any experience doing what he was doing, and it sort of blew up in his face. He took the wrong route. The gift was largely paintings, and they became destroyed in wet weather. When he arrived in Spain, the person he was supposed to stay with wasn't expecting him. He ran out of money along the trip. So
he was duped by customs officials.
Yes, he wasn't so much duped as he didn't really have enough money to pay them off as they expected.
So what happened when he finally arrived in Spain and presented his gift to the king and the Duke of Lerma?
Well, he managed. And one of the great things about Rubens as a character was he was always able to take a bad situation and turn it to his favor. So, as much of a fiasco as this trip was, he had the ability to repaint the paintings to salvage them, basically. Some of them he pretended were greater than they actually were. And he ingratiated himself with the rulers of Spain and ended up painting one of his first, really his first masterpiece, with this portrait of the Duke of Lerma, who was basically the power behind the throne in Spain.
You suggest he's a Cheney-esque type figure.
Yeah, he was. In some ways, yes. He was certainly the most powerful man in the kingdom of Spain at that time. The king, Philip, wasn't super interested in ruling his own kingdom and essentially left it to Lerma to run the show.
Well, it might be helpful for our listeners if you'd help set the political scene for us. The story takes place during what's called the 80 Years' War. Who were the main players?
Well, the 80 Years' War was essentially the war of revolution fought by the Dutch against Spain. In the 17th century and the 16th century, Spain had dominion over the entire Low Countries, which was today modern Belgium and the Netherlands. And during the 16th century, this area, it was kind of like the Iraq of the 17th century, a land divided by sectarian violence with this very negligent foreign occupying force that would be Spain. And the country sort of broke in two, with the north, Holland, becoming independent, and the south, what is modern Belgium, Flanders, remaining loyal to Spain. And Rubens was from Flanders and remained basically loyal to Spain. And he spent pretty much his entire career as a diplomat trying to broker this conflict, because Antwerp sat on the front lines of this conflict and it was really a victim of the conflict. And he was really admirably working throughout his career, pragmatically trying to get these sides to stop fighting this war.
And Belgium is still a divided country.
Indeed it is.
The only country in Europe that might likely break apart at this point. So we have Spain, and then we have France, and there we have Marie de Medici, and the equivalent of the Duke of Lerma, Cardinal Richelieu, the power behind the throne, kind of.
Indeed. And he was actually a client of Rubens, and then later they became political enemies. Richelieu, of course, was, as the leader of France, was opposed to Spain, to which Rubens owed allegiance. So they found themselves working against each other. And, of course, as a statesman, there was no one more cagey than Richelieu. Very difficult opponent for Rubens.
He also, Rubens, and another figure here is Charles I, the King of England. Now, what was his role in all of this?
Well, Charles adored Rubens. In fact, he liked him so much that he asked Rubens to send a self-portrait of Rubens to him, which Rubens thought this was a very awkward request. He thought it was inappropriate, given that he was a Spanish citizen and also a commoner, essentially, to send a portrait to a king. And then Charles actually hung it outside his bedroom, which is very strange. But Rubens developed this sort of triangular way to bring peace to end this 80 Years' War. I like to call it sort of the transitive theory of diplomacy. He hoped by bringing Spain into peace with England, England would then force its ally, Holland, and England and Holland were allies, that England and because England was allied with Holland, if England became allied also with Spain, then Holland would sort of be forced to become allied, to come to peace with Spain. So that was his sort of pragmatic, triangular mode of solving this conflict that had gone on for decades.
My guess is Mark Lamster, whose latest book is Master of Shadows, A Secret Diplomatic Career of the Painter Peter Paul Rubens. It is published by Doubleday. So he had, Rubens had certain tactics as a negotiator?
Yeah, he was aggressive and as a negotiator. It's a very, his greatest gift as a negotiator was his presence. He was a charismatic man, and people just were naturally drawn to him. People liked him, and they felt comfortable with him, and that he was an honest broker, that they could talk to him, and he was persistent.
Well, he was trying to arrange an armistice between France and Spain, get Antwerp back on its feet, arrange for peace, and also get all of these Western European nations talking to each other. How successful was he?
Well, the armistice he was trying to draw was between Spain and England, and it gets a little hairy in here. And he managed to do that. That was an incredible accomplishment. I mean, it's like almost these were two traditional powers. You know, the England sank the Spanish Armada within memory of many of the people who were taking part in these negotiations. And yet he managed to bring these two powers to peace. It wasn't the most lasting peace. And I think one of the reasons why Rubens' role as a diplomat is somewhat forgotten is because just through freaks of history, that peace dissolved.
Do you think he was aided by the fact that they all respected him as a painter? I mean, he's one of the greatest painters of the 17th century, at least that part of the 17th century. His main rival during his lifetime might have been Caravaggio, who probably had more of a real influence on art. But Rubens is a pretty famous artist during his lifetime.
I think even at that time, probably even more than Caravaggio, or certainly equal.
And a very different kind of life. Caravaggio dies running from the cops.
Indeed. They probably met. Rubens was a big supporter of Caravaggio as a painter, not as a personality. He has quite the opposite kind of personality. He was the most middle-class figure sort of a paradigmatic middle-class figure. He didn't drink. He didn't carouse. He wasn't a wild man in any way, not what this romantic vision of the painter like Van Gogh or Pollock or Caravaggio, these sort of wild, deranged men. I think that's one of the reasons we don't think of him so much these days, because he doesn't fit into what we normally think about as a great painter. But this helped him become a great diplomat. The fact that he was a great painter was his entree into so many important political figures, and it was also it also hurt him because being a painter, he was a craftsman, and diplomacy at that time was really the province of the aristocracy. So that it was both good for him and bad for him.
Well, you talked about Richelieu earlier. They were friendly for a time, and then they became estranged. At one point, after Richelieu more or less banishes Marie de Medici from France, she goes and stays with Rubens in Antwerp. That struck me as a real surprise. And she also borrowed money from him. I mean, a Medici borrowing money from a painter.
It's extraordinary, considering one of his most important commissions was this enormous series of paintings for her new house, which was the Luxembourg Palace in Paris, which I'm sure most listeners know. Those paintings are now one of the prizes of the Louvre. He had painted this incredible series for her. It's a very complex series celebrating her life, but she had a rather unsalubrious life, and part of her problem was that she was basically at war with her own son, the king, and she ended up being thrown from France, and she ended up at the doorstep of Flanders, and Rubens was there to sort of take up her cause. And he actually thought it was wise to do that, to take up her cause. He thought because France and Spain were at odds, he thought this was a good opportunity for Spain to attack France and sort of reinstall a more friendly regime there with Marie at the head of state.
That didn't happen.
It didn't happen. He thought it should have happened, and he was probably right, but the powers in Madrid were not ready to take up his plan for that.
He also worked as an architect, I mentioned. How did he find time to do all these different things? Because he ran that art factory and didn't have to do much of the painting?
He was just an unbelievable polymath, an incredibly gifted man who could do many things at one time is one answer. There's a famous anecdote where someone came to see him painting, and he was painting, he was dictating a letter, he was having a conversation with his visitors, and he was listening to a reader read him from classical poetry, or I think it was Tacitus. So he could do a lot of things at once. He was a very gifted businessman, very gifted at organizing his life. And he also, he was involved in all of these different disciplines. And today we're in a world where we specialize. But at that time, I think there was an idea that in order to really fully understand the world, you needed to understand all the disparate parts of it, and that you kind of could. Knowledge wasn't so deep then that there was a feeling that you couldn't do that. In fact, it was a necessity. So I think that's why he had his hands in so many different things. And in politics, he felt it sort of a civic duty to become involved in politics.
Although he then retired from diplomatic activities when he got older, partly after he married his second wife. His first wife died. The second wife is the one we associate with all of those Rubenesque paintings.
Yes, that's true. She is the Helena Formant. He married her when she was 16. I believe he was 53. It was a September-May romance, but he was quite ardent for her. And when we think of Rubens and the beautiful nude, it's often her that we think of. He painted her constantly. He adored her. Often her face will appear numerous times in the same painting late in his career.
What was the status of the 80 Years' War and the end of his life?
Well, it had recommenced.
This was not a war that continued all the time. It started up and stopped and stopped.
Yes, it was on and off. In fact, Rubens was able to make his great fortune during a period of truce in the war. He returned from Italy. He had spent these 7 years abroad, and then he comes back and builds this incredible wealth and painting practice in Antwerp during this hiatus of peace. But that peace ends, and then he spends essentially a decade of his life trying to broker a peace to this war. And in the end, he isn't able to, and he sort of washes his hands of politics and diplomacy and sort of devotes himself primarily to painting.
Although some of his recommendations were put into action after he died.
Indeed. It was not long after he died that the piece that he sort of envisioned came to pass.
Is there any other artist who did this sort of thing? I know Michelangelo also was an architect, and some other artists did other things like that. But has anybody done so many different things?
Well, we call them Renaissance men because men of that period were involved in many different things. But Rubens' engagement with politics is pretty much unprecedented. There were other painters who became politically engaged. It was not uncommon for a painter to do minor diplomatic missions and occasionally even major diplomatic missions, but no one had before or since has become involved in political affairs to the degree of Rubens. I mean, negotiating a treaty between superpowers, essentially, it's not likely to happen again.
And you've written an article for the Huffington Post in which you suggested that Barack Obama might learn a thing or two from Peter Paul Rubens. We don't have the time to explain that, but people can always check that out at the Huffington Post. Mark Lamster writes on the arts and culture for many publications, including Huffington Post, New York Times, the Los Angeles Times. His book, Master of Shadows, The Secret Diplomatic Career of the Painter Peter Paul Rubens, is published by Doubleday. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.